Blog Talk Radio.
NBA basketball fans, the College Ball Show is back. He's Marshall, I'm Chris. We're here to break down everything that is the NBA playoffs. I call it the College Ball Show because we start in September with college football. Then we move to college basketball all the way to the national championship in both those sports. And then we switch up all of our focus on to the NBA and, of course, the NBA playoffs, and that's what mode that we are all the way in. And, of course, stay with us all the way through the finals. We also do an NBA draft show and a free agency show. So we're going to kind of take it all the way into July, and then we'll have a little gap until September rolls around. But anyway, we're here to just kind of talk about the last couple of days of action, kind of catch us up, you know, in the series. We actually did get some upsets, some great performances, and some injuries in the first round that played a part. All of those kind of played a part in, you know, getting to the second round. So the first round on paper did not look good. Let's be honest with that. But it gave us some entertainment. We got some game sevens. We got some entertainment and also some surprise. Now, sure, sometimes injury is a crappy way to get some surprises, but hey, that's sports and that's how it goes. So we were kind of happy considering what we thought we had on paper in the first round. Then you look at the second round and, you know, you're looking at these series, you're looking at an inexperienced team in Portland who probably moved on, or at least it helped them move on without Chris Paul and Griffith, especially Chris Paul the last couple of games. You're looking at Portland, you're looking at Golden State, and you're thinking, you know, I think this is a they may be entertaining, but there's not going to be much here. You look at the Spurs, and you look at this in the Oklahoma City, and you're thinking, especially off, you know, we had already seen Game 1, and sometimes that Game 1 can really be a telltale of things to come. It truly can. And the way the Spurs in the second round in that first game just devoured Oklahoma City, it really felt like, well, I'm not really thinking that's going to go to six or seven. So that's kind of like, well, okay. And then Cleveland, Atlanta, you thought that'd be entertaining. You thought that it would be competitive. And I think that, you know, in some of those games, it was very competitive. The last game of the series was, you know, very competitive. But you would have thought that'd go a little further. So, you know, that kind of – that surprised me for sure, a sweep. And really, we had our eyes on Miami and Toronto. Now, that series has definitely not disappointed thus far, and it's all tied up. So we're going to get into some of this recap and also kind of look ahead to tonight where we have the big Game 5. It's all tied up 2-2, Oklahoma City, San Antonio Spurs. We're going to get into what's coming up, but I think we'll just kind of take it series by series. And I think we should start because, you know, you obviously have a tie to them, the Golden State Warriors. So let's start there. It's always, you know, like I said, I thought you're kind of thinking this is going to be an interesting series. You know, it'll be fun style of play, yada, yada, yada. But then when you have Steph Curry come back and get hurt the way he did, instead of just twisting that ankle, he came back and then that really random way to get hurt, although it happens because we see that, you know, sweat on the floor a lot. It just, in that moment, it was kind of just a random thing that happens, you know, in sports. So you're thinking, okay, well, you know, let's see, because they still should be able to beat this team or at least, you know, hang in there until Steph gets back. And that's basically what they did. They were up against it last night as far as it was kind of doubtful on Sunday. Would they play Curry? It looked like they were going to, but then it didn't. It kind of felt like just seeing him warm up that he would play and the fact that he had a shot, you know, in game three to play. It kind of made me think, yeah, he'll probably be back. But I wasn't quite sure. But obviously a big spot. It's 2-1. One more game in Portland as of now anyway. And it was definitely a big spot. So it's a great time to get, by the way, the unanimous MVP, and sure played like it in the fourth quarter in overtime. I think he had 17 in overtime or whatever after starting like 1-for-10 from three. He really straightened that out. Let's talk about this series, and definitely we got to talk about last night, because I'll tell you what, that was a fun, fun game to watch, back and forth. You know, the second half, you could see Golden State was definitely cutting into the lead, but I wasn't quite sure if they were going to cut it all the way down, and sure enough, they did. They caught up to them in the third, and it was tit for tat all the way down the stretch. Portland at times looked like they had an advantage. Golden State looked like they were getting hot just at the right time with Curry and company. Break it down, man, because that was a really fun game, and in the fact that we got into overtime as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like you said, it was just very enjoyable. I feel that when you watch Portland, their home court, I would say, is a little more special than most. They have a good vibe going. They injury or not, they won three games against the Clippers. And again, Curry was out, but they beat Golden State pretty handily in game three. I think that could have been motivation to bring Curry back for game four. Because the rumor mill kind of been circling, Chris. There were some people saying, maybe you bring Steph back game three. Yeah, but if we can take care of business or even go home 2-2, why rush him back? Well, game three, Golden State got up, I think, by about 10 or 11 in the first, and after that, it was done. There was no coming back. And part of me was saying, after I watched that game, I was talking to some buddies. I'm like, God, Portland didn't miss a shot to win game three. But I also told myself the same thing during the Clippers series. So I think there is kind of that vibe when they just kind of feed off the crowd there. You got a bunch of young kids that honestly don't know any better. That when they get hot, they get hot. And when you have a guy like CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard, it doesn't take a lot for them to get hot. They maybe don't have the level that Steph Curry does, but it would be hard to find a lot more guys that are more talented at shooting the ball than Lillard. So I think there was pressure to bring Curry back for game four. Clearly he looked good. I have not heard any injuries that he re-aggravated his MCL or that he's sore or whatnot. And there is some minor issues, I guess, the media is probably, or the Golden State Warriors probably don't want to admit it. But yeah, there was definitely a build for game four. Of, okay, Curry is coming back, but he's not starting. I did see the news during the day of, all right, Curry's going to play, but then when I was watching some sports earlier in the night, kind of going between hockey and basketball with the Toronto game, I didn't see him starting. So I was like, okay, well, Curry's going to play reserve minutes. All right, well, that makes sense. That's fine. Maybe Curry's going to play, 15 to 20 minutes. You'll get him in for the key parts of the game, kind of give him some extra extended rest time during commercials, and you're thinking, all right, easing back into it. Perfect plan. Well, the plan kind of got derailed when Sean Livingston, who has been incredibly reliable, I would even call him the X factor for this team, in my opinion, as a Golden State fan, got double teed up, and he got double teed up quick. Now, clearly for Sean Livingston during the middle of the game, he got, I want to say second quarter, was going down for a layup against Portland, basically got elbowed in the face. It was a horribly missed call.
It was more like a forearm. It was like a clothesline to his forehead.
Right.
It wasn't an elbow, but he clotheslined him.
Yeah, you're right. Elbow is the wrong word. Yeah, clothesline to the forehead. 100% a foul, but it was missed. And Livingston was not having it. He ran down to the court pretty authoritatively, said quite a bit, as you could just judge from how he was kind of moving his head and yakking, and got teed up, still wanted to pitch his own 2 cents, and got double teed. So when Coach Kerr seen that, you got to imagine you're thinking, okay, I'll let Curry play here and there, use him for clutch, maybe if we're winning in the fourth, we can rest him. Well, that plan goes out the window when your man – Sean Livingston, who's the other point guard, gets benched. Or, excuse me, gets tossed. That basically says, okay, Steph, you know, we're going to maybe play 15 to 20. Well, now we're looking at 33 to 34 or even higher. And I guess that was kind of almost like a blessing. I saw one person on Twitter say that the best thing that happened for Golden State was Livingston getting tossed out of the game. I mean, looking back on that, you're kind of like, huh, because of what Steph did. But the first half was incredibly good basketball.
Yeah, but prior to that, not to cut you off, but prior to him getting hot, he was cold, you know, let's be honest. You know what I mean? He was 1-for-10 or whatever. So it looked like, man, he's rusty. This is kind of a weird way to bring him in. But no matter what, you had to get the rust off some point, you know. But he looked pretty rusty right away, which is expected. I mean, shoot, he's only played in, at that point, two games that he had to leave both of them. So, I mean, what's he going to do? He's going to go through that rust, you know.
He actually shot a three that I didn't really see a lot of arc on it, and I was kind of like in my head, like, dude, was that Steph or was that someone else kind of taking over in his body? Like that was
that
a
looked like
player,
Rubio,
kind of like kind of something you and I would suck up in the gym, Chris.
That is Rubio. I think that was a disgraceful comment. I take it all back.
So Golden State, they got down 14-2, and you're thinking, oh, God, like, here we go again. I know Curry's not starting, but Portland's going to carry the momentum they had from Game 3 and carry it into Game 4. And they never gave up the lead. Golden State was down 8 points at half. Portland had momentum. Golden State had played better in the second quarter, but there still really wasn't a feeling of, okay, we know Curry's on the court, but Portland's not running away. They're not afraid of this. They're going to use their home crowd and McCollum and Lillard. And in the third quarter, it got a little tighter. It got to the point now to where, okay, Curry was still kind of getting the rust off, but he was maybe getting more of a flow. To me, it seemed like their offense was running a little smoother. Obviously, we talked about this before. I kind of feel that when Curry doesn't play, it is kind of like almost a street ball way because Livingston loves to run. And Draymond, Harrison, and Clay love to run. As funny as this, Curry almost keeps them more calm. He does establish an offense where they can run more of a half-court presence. He might chuck one quick, but they have more of a flow to them. And so you start to see the offense come back, which you haven't seen for a while due to Curry being hurt. And come fourth quarter, there's basically, let's just start taking turns. Because you know that Lillard and McCollum ain't going away. And Terry Stotts is going to make the right decisions, and Coach Kerr is going to counter him with the same idea. So we got ourselves a great game of basketball. Harrison Barnes hit a big three with about 50 seconds to go. At the very end of the game, Curry went for a layup, which was missed, so that led us into overtime. And in overtime, it's like, oh, by the way, guys, my name is Steph Curry. I fell asleep because I had to sub and I'd been working and I was a little bit tired. I didn't obviously want to go to bed, but I fell asleep. And so I woke up to check my phone, and I was like, wow, Golden State scored 21 points in overtime. And using the Scores app, I thought that that must have been a typo. I assumed that there must have been two overtimes collectively combined, and they just must have maybe slipped it into one. Or maybe I was too groggy in the morning and wasn't quite reading it properly. So 21, because that seems high. Normally overtime NBA is like 12, 14-ish, I would say, on average. And then I see that Curry dropped 17. I'm thinking, dear God, like you said, Chris, you start off shooting 1-of-10, and then you're like, okay, you know, that little rust I had, it's gone now. Livingston, my boy's out. Okay, I'll step up for the team. Oh, by the way, I'm going to start dropping threes again. And I believe he hit three threes in the overtime, maybe three or four. Three for sure.
Three of them were in a row, too. I think almost three out of four possessions in a row.
And it was just typical cold-blooded. You come off a pick and roll. The one SportsCenter kept showing where he was kind of literally facing the basket head-on from probably about 5 feet behind the arc. He just drilled it. And the bench went nuts. And it's like, dude, man, if you're a Portland fan, you're thinking, okay, going into that game and I'll toss this back to you. Okay, Curry's dinged up. He might play. We looked great in Game 3. We got our home crowd for Game 4. Let's win tonight, and we're guaranteed another home playoff game. We're not expected to win this series, but hey, let's give ourselves a chance. And throughout the first half, we're thinking, okay, we're looking good. Curry's rusty. Third quarter, all right, we're battling. Fourth quarter, all right, Damian and CJ are going to do their thing. And then over time, you're like, oh, shit. Like, that dude, like, really? He had to come back now, and he did. He set an all-time record for most points in overtime. Again, I thought it was two overtimes, Chris. 21's a lot, and 17 by one dude. But you can't stop him. He on one of them, he did a fadeaway after, like, eight dribbles. The defenseman tried a pick and roll. It's hard to cover a guy when he's 35 feet away from the hoop. He just did his thing. So it was kind of a crazy game of many different factors leading to Curry playing more, Curry shaking off that rust. He appears to be healthy, clearly. That I hope that knee stays healthy. But, man, at least, though, we've got a more entertaining series to talk about. Portland has played better. The game three was good. Game four, actually, last night was incredible. You got Curry back in the guidelines. It's a little more entertaining than we thought, and last night was a hell of a game. And kind of fitting that the day Curry gets his MVP award unanimously, the night before he's kind of like, oh, by the way, this is why I was the MVP this year. Kind of fitting, you could argue.
It wouldn't be much of an argument. It's very fitting. So when did you doze off? Like sometime in the third or something?
I was able to stay up until like middle of the fourth. So I was doing my best, but I had to wake up again at like about 7, and I'd been watching sports all day, and I didn't get my great sleep the night before. So I was like, one of those, you try to stay awake on your couch or in your bed, and you fall asleep.
Oh, I know exactly how it is, definitely. I know exactly.
So unfortunately, I woke up to see my phone. I had a pretty good feeling that Golden State would have won, but I was like, oh, holy cow, overtime. Oh, 20, Curry, 17. Holy cow. Like, why did I not stay up to witness that live?
Yeah, it was a great game. And I'll tell you what, the one thing I'll say, you know, and this isn't, I mean, Curry was going off. He got hot all of a sudden, right? But the one thing I'll say is, and this is, the last 5 minutes of the game in overtime, you know, we had a long conversation about old-timers and all that. And really the only guy I've ever agreed with fully was Oscar Robertson, because Oscar Robertson was the one who actually broke down when you pick up Steph. You know what I mean? He's the only one that actually gave us some detail, not just like Scottie Pippen or some old-timer going, well, that'd be easy, you know, that whatever. He wasn't saying that's easy. He would just say, the point is, they're not checking him, dude. Steph's going to keep doing this all freaking night if you don't at least go out to him. And you know what? On the pick and roll, and not even on the pick and roll, even before the pick and roll even got there, there was about six times, maybe seven, I don't know, I didn't count, but at least six or seven times in the last 5 minutes of that game and in overtime that they, at half court, he's passing half court. Now he's midway between half court and three-point line, and still no one has checked him. And it's like, you do see him getting hot, right? You better freaking get out there and at least make him beat you off the dribble, and hopefully you'll have some help behind you, because you can't, he's going to pop up. And when he does that slide where he kind of slows down and changes speed, that's when he's the most dangerous, because you don't know if he's going to drive or not, and he kind of comes up there kind of, it's almost lackadaisical, because he wants you to kind of be off guard, and all of a sudden he'll just kind of – and then do whatever the play's going to be, the screen for him, or just go right off the dribble, whatever, you know, or whatever he comes up with.
Sure.
But honestly, time and time again, whether it was the small forward or the big not coming out and putting your feet behind the three-point line, like at some point he was just playing with basically – like three players. Like he said, one time they actually did front him a little bit on it, you know, on the pick and roll, but then he started dribbling a little to the right and he started backing up. It's like, well, where are you going, dude? You know, let him go by you. Like, who cares if he goes by you? At least he goes by you, you know? Like, there's still people behind you, dude. There's a guy right in the Plumlee's right in the middle of the center of the rim. Like, you do have help, dude. You know what I mean? And it was quite funny, and a lot of people this happens to. Now, some people are just not good enough to defend them, and it's damn near unfair.
Yeah.
No, that's different. I'm not ripping those guys. But Lillard missed a couple of just not just assignments, but just getting to a spot. You have to try to beat them or at least match them to the spot, and you need your feet, your full 12, 15-inch 16-inch, you know, Nikes need to be behind the three-point line when he's dribbling up at least. You cannot just wait for him, let him cross. He comes in all sly, and then all of a sudden he'll do whatever he's going to do. And it was funny because he said, okay, well, let's see if he does back up a little bit. And then he, since his, you know, two full steps were way behind the opposite way of the three-point line, not where they should be, he's like, all right, I'll just pull up right here. And he, you know, that whole maybe – I don't know, 6 feet behind the three. If you're not going to guard him there, he's just going to shoot. That's just him. You know what I mean? And it was a display that I don't want to take away from Curry. But I will say, and I'll always say this, not just about Curry, but just in general, you know, guarding the ball coming down the court, just everything when it comes to defense and team defense and help and all that. They were lost on defense all of a sudden. Yet they had played so good for so long, but when it came down to it, and that's why I can't blame the coach, because I guarantee the coach is saying the same freaking thing. It's just when you're in the moment, all of a sudden you're like, dude, he just did the same play. They're doing the same play. Like, at least make him shoot with a hand in the face. You know what I mean? He's still going to probably hit it, but you got to at least do that. So that's one take where you're just like, dude, you guys fell apart, but they are a young team together, and they are fun to watch, no doubt about it. Let's keep it moving, though, because we got ourselves a series that, like I said, game
I,
one.
I just,
oh, go ahead. Go
let,
ahead.
Let me make one more note, then we can move on. Absolutely.
Gotta be quick, though, because we are 20 minutes
it,
on
it
this.
Will.
So.
That's fine. I just think that the emergence of Klay and Draymond have really shown. And maybe this is a point that people realize, but the way that Klay Thompson has stepped up in the games that he has missed, it is kind of that of Klay Thompson's not that bad. Everyone loves Curry. He's the unanimous MVP. But the way Klay Thompson and Draymond Green have played, that is showing guys that we're not that bad. We're maybe not Steph, but don't say that we're not that great if it wasn't for him. And I just thought that the way Klay Thompson and Draymond, they're the pieces you're going to need. So it's just an underlining point of, you know, how good is Draymond Green? Is he assistant? You know, what kind of player is he without Steph? How good of a shooter is Klay without Curry? They're pretty damn good. That's my quick point. I'll just say that. But now you can move on to I'm guessing you're going to the Spurs and the Thunder, my friend.
Well, and with that, just to add to that, yeah, except you got to get a real true thing, you'd have to take him off that team and put him on a different team. We all know he's awesome. Shit, he started as the MVP before Curry, actually. Draymond did. If you think about it, through about 15 games, what'd he have, like, it felt like 7 triple-doubles, you know what I mean? He was like, is this guy going to get a triple-double every game? Like, what the hell, you know? So it's a lot easier to play within a system and play when you know everyone around you and you know they're going to be in their spot. And then, like you said, these two are studs on their own, too. But still, it's not that people are ripping him, saying, oh, they couldn't be shit without him. But if he was the number one guy at a complete different franchise, then we could at least have that debate. But to just say, well, of course, they were both all-stars, weren't they? Like, it's not like they were who dogged them. I don't remember hearing a bunch of people dog them.
I mean, ESPN had an article come out, like, in the playoffs of, like, well, Draymond Green can't really shoot jumpers. Like, he busted like 5 or 6 threes in the playoffs, you know, and I think that if people are going to say Curry's one of the best shooters of all time, well, you got to put Klay in the same sentence, or maybe most people do, but it's like he's almost just as good of a shooter. So I just hear those occasional slights of like, well, Draymond can't hit jumpers. Well, do we need him to shoot threes? Like, seems people are always kind of coming at him, but maybe that's
but they're not doing it
out
in the finals winning without Curry, though. They are playing a team that maybe shouldn't even be in the second round right now. So we got to put all that in there. But I hear you. If someone wrote an article saying he sucks or like he can't shoot or whatever, that's not right, because the guy does so much other stuff. In fact, a perfect example is he had such a great game in game 3, but he said, I was disappointed, though. It really reminded me of KG, and that shows you how much he cares about the game and about his performance, that he said, even though stat line, fantasy line, it looked like he had a great game and he did offensively, but he actually did struggle at times defensively, and he was man enough to say, although I may have had the best game out of everyone on both sides, you know what? Defensively, we didn't do it, and that's me. That's my job. I got to do that. And that tells you something about Draymond Green right there.
Well, speaking of being a man, I got to admit, Chris, I was coming hard. I said a 4-0 sweep. I was confident. I was cocky. I said there is no way in hell that the Spurs lose a damn game. We don't have an archive podcast, but it would be kind of funny if we could play my rant like maybe 10 seconds of it, because I was feeling good. I was going to go down to Vegas and say, hey, give me the 4-0 sweep. Even after one game, I'm feeling locked in. I don't believe I've been in an alternate world.
I think Durant heard you and said, now, wait a second there, Marshall. Wait just a second. I am Kevin Durant, damn it. I don't care if Westbrook's shooting a lot. I'm going to start to shoot a lot.
Well, needless to say, Chris, I'll let you start this one. The series is not 4-0. I don't believe.
I don't think so. I'm not sure. Let me check my stats real quick. Nope, it's not. But I'll tell you what. There was a game, if you look at, you know, obviously the way Durant just daggered him in game two, you know, a couple of times. Like, it was like, dagger? Oh, you're not dead? Oh, Jon Snow? Okay, here we go. I'll kill you again. And I'll kill you again. And he daggered the shit out of him to get a victory in game two, which 98-97, that was already like, wow, just to get there was pretty, you know, that was a good ball game. And then game three was a blast. And really, you had, oh, what was it? I think Durant took 18 shots or something like that. And that's how many. Actually, I think that Westbrook, it kind of was a flashback to what Westbrook was years ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago, that he actually missed more shots than Durant took in the game. So that tells you now, wait a second, you know, that has a feeling of old school Westbrook, where you're like, all right, dude, mm-hmm. If you're going to hold the ball, you got to be productive. And it can't be just about scoring. And not that, you know, he did get a bunch of assists as well, but he just, that had a problem there. But that was still a very competitive, very tight game, came all the way down to the wire. Spurs got it done, no doubt about it. And another guy, Aldridge, the first two games and the last game too, he's been playing lights out too. And you just look at their, you know, two young pieces there. They're going to be tough for years to come, no matter what happens in this series as well. Just the way they have, you know, rebooted their team for the future too. So they got some old guys, but they're still going to be good with those two being the the centerpieces of that, and we'll see where that goes, and who knows about this year, you know, obviously. And that's what makes it fun. You know, we had some surprises. Like I said, we had some, you know, impressive stuff so far. I mean, Curry last night. I mean, we're not even getting into Cleveland yet, and how they found their outside shot and how they're blending at just the right time, that's for sure. But game four was, you know, San Antonio kind of hot and heavy right away. Actually, just looking at the stat, 27-17 after the first quarter. Oklahoma City grinded back into it and were definitely within range heading into the fourth quarter. It was nip and tuck, and it was just like, all right, dude, we got ourselves a game. And I'll tell you what, Oklahoma City completely shut the door on them. 34-16 in that fourth frame, got it done, 111-97. Durant is just dagger here, dagger there, and it seemed like they couldn't miss a freaking shot either. We were just talking about Curry, you know, and when they get going in Portland, when they get going in game three, well, they couldn't miss a shot down the stretch. And like I said, 34-16 to close it out. So many people wanted, you know, even before this damn game, Marshall, they're sitting there asking Durant about joining the Spurs. And they're asking Tony Parker, what would you say about Durant joining the Spurs? It's like, dude, they should be kicked out of the locker room at that point. You can do it during the year. That's fine, because that's your right. But once the playoffs are here, and then, oh, by the way, you're going head-to-head with the freaking team you're talking about. It's
no doubt.
Like on both sides. You know, it's like, come on. Both teams got to hear about that stuff. And I think Durant's done a good job of just basically shutting his mouth. So he hasn't been, you know, we see some players like Howard and other players in the past kind of, you know, linger into that same season and answer questions they shouldn't and not, you know, whereas Durant's been pretty damn quiet about it as much as you can. But
sure,
here we are, and Durant, he's still necessary. What's scary is he hasn't really found his three-point range. He was only 3 of 9, but he got to the line, ended up with 41 points, and he's coming alive. He's coming alive now. Westbrook had a better game because he didn't have many turnovers, but it still didn't shoot the ball great. Really didn't get, he only gets to the free throw line 4 times, which is crazy. But they got it done, and tonight is the night, Game 5, and we know percentage-wise, the Game 1s, the Game 3s, the Game 5s, we don't got to talk about percentage-wise Game 7 because it's a wrap at Game 7, whoever wins it. But Game 5 means a lot, as we know, in the NBA. What are you thinking when it comes to this? They're going to be back at home, but they got that loosey. You know, when you got a team that's loosey-goosey, Portland kind of has been kind of loosey-goosey during that series, too. Obviously, not having Steph, you know, has to do with how they were almost tied 2-2. You know, if it wasn't for Steph coming back, they may have been 2-2. That's the way it looked like going, you know what I mean? But here we are, man. We're tied up, and we can sit there and say this team matches up well with that team. And just like last year, you know, that Clippers team could match up well. You even said it last year, but then they were up 3-1. They took their eye off the ball and got beat by Houston, so it didn't even matter. We don't even know what the hell would happen. Well, guess what? Here we are. They took the, you know, I hate to say, oh, it's just the Spurs taking the eye off the ball, because, damn, Oklahoma City's played great in the last 3 games. Wow, though. That's all I can say is just, I mean, what's your gut telling you? I really think that San Antonio is going to get it done at home, but I feel like it's Game 7 now, and San Antonio's still going to win it, but I feel this thing's going 7. I just, with the momentum going, and we still don't have a three-pointing shooter in Durant right now. He's been struggling. You know, that's just a matter of time that that'll come around, and maybe it will be Game 6 when they're facing elimination, and he'll go 5 of 8 or 7 of 12 or something like that. Well, what's your gut telling you about tonight and the rest of the series? Because we ain't got no sweep. They're going to have to sweep it up after the game. You know, they're going to have to sweep the stands and everything, but that's about it.
Yeah, my Nationals got swept by the Cubs. That was the only sweep I didn't want to see this past weekend. I think momentum has switched. I think when we were talking about the Golden State and the season the Spurs had, and we were kind of mentioning defense and kind of comparing eras, and we were having our debate, an argument a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago, I talked about how the Spurs and the Warriors play defense and offense different than anyone. I haven't seen that offense and defense. When I have watched the Spurs and Thunder play, and I haven't seen every minute tightly, but from what I've seen them play, I've seen the Spurs become more isolationist. And it honestly, I don't get it. Okay, I get that LaMarcus Aldridge is a hell of a player, and Oklahoma City truly doesn't have a guy that can match him. Taking advantage of matchups completely makes sense. And using DL, too, to kind of use your post. But I just feel there's moments where the Spurs, like you said, they have kind of taken their eye off the ball. They've had a lackadaisical approach. Maybe they feel they can coast to playing the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Because I really don't see an excuse for why they have looked kind of flat the way they did. I mean, you can't tell me that Durant should have outscored the Spurs in the fourth quarter. Maybe they should have won Game 4. I won't argue with you about that at all, Chris. But Durant scored more points than the Spurs did as a team. They're not playing the way they did. When I think of the Spurs, I think of, you know, passing, 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 taking a great open shot. Well, what part of giving L.A. the ball and letting him do his thing down low in the block and kind of watching is Spurs offense? And you're talking about a Oklahoma City defense that gave up 100 points 3 times to Dallas in Round 1. Oklahoma City did not just reinvent the wheel and learn how to play D. This is a team that had 14 fourth-quarter losses of being in the lead because they melted down defensively. I honestly think you did nail it, Chris. I think that the mental
Well, you can make an argument some of that was offensively, too, in the last 5 minutes, though, too, because they, you know, they would be stagnant as well. It wasn't just
– And obviously, if Durant – and it is playoff time, and Durant and Westbrook are going to step their game up a level, that's fair. But you can't tell me a full season worth of trends all of a sudden gone away. I haven't seen every quarter, but – I want to see this first team be that team that passes the ball again and rotates. They didn't go 41-1 at home to watch LA isolate, and they didn't go 41 at home to play crappy defense. I won't completely knock the Thunder. They have two of the most offensively talented players in the league, but that fourth quarter, a meltdown or beatdown, this isn't the Spurs basketball of a team that went 41-1 at home. I think they do need to kind of kick it in the butt and say, guys, we're a great team, but we need to start playing like it again. I mean, Popovich said in game two, we didn't really come out trying. Well, what the hell? What are you waiting for? You know, you didn't set the 73-game win record. Like, you're protecting your home turf. I could get if a team comes out flat on the road. You know, we're not that jacked. Dude, you got your home fans. You're playing a team that you know is dying at the bit to smack you in the face and steal a game from you at home. And you come out flat, and then you get smoked game four on the road and Durant outscores your whole team. Like, there are a lot of red flags. I'll own up, I completely screwed up on my sweet pick.
Yeah, you got to come the other way, though, and talk about the Thunder, because you had them being swept, and now it's all on the Spurs, but you're taking away credit from the Thunder. You obviously underestimated the Thunder, too, though, like most of it did.
Yeah. I did. I think that obviously it was, I'll say, obviously somewhat naive to say they would get swept. I would repick it again, but obviously then it you know, you can say, well, Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant has earned his stripes. He dropped 41 last game. That, you know, as much as we say LaMarcus Aldridge is a problem, now Kawhi Leonard is the best defensive player in basketball. Flip the quarter with Draymond Green, but when Westbrook is jumping up and driving to the lane and Durant is hitting his jumpers, he's hard to defend. So to switch the momentum a little bit, Durant's really been doing his part. God, for him, he probably just enjoyed being on the court. Like you said, God, I don't want to answer more questions of, am I going to L.A. or am I going to rejoin Scott Brooks, or, oh, I want to be a Spur now. Well, who the hell said that article? That could have been leaked by a beat writer or an assistant trainer, for all we know. So he is kind of just shutting people up, saying, dude, I just dropped 41. I'm not going to answer my free agent questions. How about we talk about the game I just played? I guess you do have to give Billy Donovan some credit. I hacked him pretty good. He's a rookie coach. He's facing one of the greatest, but he's clearly making some moves that are good, Chris. I mean, they did have a great fourth quarter. They've been able to go to a hot hand in Deion Waiters, you know, throughout a lot of the year. I'll make this point and toss it back to you. They're using Andre Robertson, who was basically a defensive stopper for Oklahoma City Thunder, but you could let him shoot a 12-foot jumper 20 times in a row, you'd only probably make two or three. But now you've been able to have a hot Deion Waiters, who's kind of like the J.R. Smith of the Eastern Conference. So, you know, he's maybe not going to be a lockdown defender, but if you can have kind of like with Kyrie, LeBron, and Love, if you throw in J.R. Smith in there, who can get hot and start trucking, Deion Waiters kind of has the same mentality too. So if you are going to have to double team a Durant or Westbrook and they get super hot, leaving Deion Waiters open, I mean, it's a risk you got to take, but he can easily bust a three just like J.R. Smith does. So I think Billy Donovan has had pulled some strings. I think the Spurs psyche hasn't been maybe where it should have been, but you also have to give Oklahoma City credit because their defense has forced the Spurs to not be a team I've recognized all season and turn to one guy compared to the Spurs ball. I know we're supposed to pass the ball over and over. And the Spurs defense has looked crappy, but it's also fair to say Oklahoma City's making their open shots compared to the Eastern Conference. Some of these playoff games where we've been having teams just miss shots. I mean, the Eastern Conference has had some games where the scoreboard might be close, but like a shooting percentage, you're like, ugh. Like Charlotte or Miami, some of these teams box for.
Well, that's
like,
kind
yeah.
of the East Coast.
Yeah.
It's been that way for a while.
True, but also NBA players, if you come playoff time, if you get an open jumper, you got to hit it. and not everyone does. So, again, I'm still, I guess I'm more harsh on the Spurs than I'm, guess, giving the Thunder credit just to not rant for another 5 minutes. But, yes, Durant and Westbrook are definitely doing their part.
Cantor off the bench as well has been very solid.
Yeah. Donovan's been using the right pieces. Steven Adams is a big body that can help kind of muscle up down low and try to maintain L.A. Yeah. So, yeah, overall, I think momentum has switched. I mean, it would be crazy to say that the Spurs, you know, predict a loss, but the mental edge and the way they play has changed. I honestly didn't expect that, but so I think tonight kind of has that game set mentality because, man, if you are Oklahoma City and you can steal one tonight, you already did in game two. Dude, going home to that Rockets crowd, that'd be something. I'd expect to see about as good a performance as you can see from the Thunder, and I hope the Spurs don't come out flat like they've done a time or two in this series already, Chris.
Well, I'm kind of in between because when you say crappy defense, Thunder can put up, they can put up some points, right? We could probably agree on that. They can score a little bit.
Yeah.
So they've only been over 100 one time in the series. So let's calm down on some of that. You know what I mean? It was only one over 100, and that was the last game. And if you look at the way they closed, that fourth quarter, they just got beat on every level, offense and defense. But it was also one of those things that just happened, and that's the reason why I thought it would probably go, you know, have a good chance to go game five. And I wasn't against the sweep, but I was, you know, saying I don't think it'll be a sweep because of that. And so I think that the crappy defense is a little over the top. I mean, they lost 98-97. So it's not like it was some sort of blowout. And then they didn't play their best game, and they won 100-96. They kept Thunder under 100 again, and they were winning the game. They didn't come out flat, Marshall. They were up 27-17. They didn't come out flat in the game four. In fact, they played very solid until about, I don't remember their 7 minute mark. I don't know exactly when, but that's when they went off. And there's no excuse. Offensively and defensively, they fell apart to an extent. But also, Durant just went nuts. So it's kind of a combination of that. But I don't think their defense is completely lost. I do think you make a great point, and I think that's some of the adjustments that Oklahoma City has kind of made it. All right, we're actually going to guard the three. We're gonna guard the other players and let Aldridge get his points, and then we'll see what else we can do in this. So there is something to say. I'm not saying Aldridge is Shaq. Three out of the four games, the first two games, he kind of had Shaq numbers, you know, in the high 30s and all that. I'm not saying he's Shaq, but there's times where you go, okay, there's not much you're going to be able to do about him right now. So we'll do that, but we're going to cover the other guys too. And like you said, the passing, I thought you made a great point, though, not to destroy everything you said by any means, but I do think you made a great point about the passing. And Oklahoma City's doing it, and right now the Spurs in that fourth quarter, I don't think overall, but in that fourth quarter, and especially in game four anyway, I think you really brought up a good point there because they just, I mean, they had 12 assists for the game in that game, 23-12. That's a problem. Now, we've seen Parker kind of have a rebirth here. He's gotten more minutes and all that. We've also seen, you know, there was some rumors about Duncan not feeling great, right? Well, I'll tell you what, I believe him now because he played 12 minutes. He had a bunch of foul problems, no doubt about it, but he hasn't really been that much a part of any of this. And we know that, you know, he sits out games and all that, but he's still got to be a contributor there, no doubt about it. And same with Green. You know, when you have Duncan and Green, two guys in your starting lineup that have 0 points, that's not a good look. Now, West, in that smaller lineup, and you know, he's filled in pretty nicely, I thought. But I don't think they've played as bad as you're saying. I actually think but the game four, maybe the last quarter and a half, I 100% agree, especially the last 7 minutes or something, especially the last 7, 5 minutes. Like I said, I don't remember when it kicked in where they just went off. But clearly, like you said, 34-16. That's a done deal. But I'll tell you what, Oklahoma City's playing pretty damn good too, and they've showed flashes of it, but they just weren't consistent. Like you said, we mentioned several times now about their deficiency in the fourth quarter. So I'm kind of in between. I'm not going all the way to where you went, but I think the best point you made there, and we both kind of made right away, was mentally. I'll say this. When you destroy a team, it didn't surprise me that the Thunder didn't come back with some pride, you know, and come back. Now, it surprised me that they won that game, but when I'm watching the game, after a while, I wasn't surprised they won the game once I was actually watching it. You know how that feeling is where you go, I'd be surprised they won game two. But then when you start watching, you're like, well, dude, they got a really good chance to win this game type thing. So what's going to happen tonight? I think the Spurs will beat them tonight, but I think it'll go game seven in San Antonio. I'm still picking them to win. What's your gut telling you for tonight? Are you afraid?
I think to pick
in this one. You're like, I don't want to pick in this thing anymore.
Oh, I'm gonna switch it up from what I'm doing and from what I've seen. I'm gonna switch it up, and I think that Oklahoma City steals one tonight. I'm honestly shocked this isn't 3-1 or a sweep. I really thought from how the whole year played out, I thought you would see the framework of what occurred. And the Spurs just have not, you know, they've had their moments, as you mentioned, and, you know, the game two had the funky ending, whatever. I just think they have not dominated.
I mean, I forgot to mention that, but, I mean, I've never seen that play where a guy actually got a little off balance and elbowed the other guy, Ginobili. They had 13 seconds left with a timeout. That could have been a whole different game, too. There was about 5 fouls in that game, too. So some of them went the other way in the skirmish, but – you got to put that in the game, too. I forgot about that because it's been a while. Good call. I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead. Sorry.
This is not played out how I expected it. So I'm going to switch it up, and I think that the Thunder steal, and I think they have more momentum. That game was just kind of, whoa, what a game. The one quick point I'll make on that is some guys were debating of, well, through that funky play, the Spurs had like a 3-on-1 fast break. Would you prefer that, or would you prefer a timeout with a set play? Like, you know, there were so many weird things that happened.
Yeah, but it wasn't a normal 3-on-1. It was still a scatterbrain because he barely had control of the ball when he was dribbling down. As you could see, he lost it. So I don't know if that's the exact – I don't know.
That whole play was
clearly
messed up.
He was spinning and he didn't have control of the ball 100% because he got it stolen from him like a couple dribbles later because he never truly had. I mean, he had possession, but not a clear possession. Of course, it'd be their ball possession. I'm not saying that, but it was such a scramble at that point that, you know, I couldn't believe that he lost his balance and he literally slammed into him. It's like the ref was right the fuck there. I can't believe that. He's staring right at it. I've never seen that play, like most people said, too. But, in fact, I was so – because we were behind – the view was behind the player live. So I didn't see the actual nothing, no contact. I didn't see that because I was thinking about where he's going to pass the damn ball. So I'm looking at the court, you know what I mean? I'm not looking at him. And when Weber's like, just wait until you see this replay. This is bullshit. This, that, and the other. I'm thinking, dude, it was a scramble on the ground. They both fouled each other, you know what I mean? It should have been a jump ball or whatever, you know? But then he's like, no. At the beginning of the play, before the play even happened, I was like, oh, wow, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, and when I was watching at work, we had no audio, so I assumed that the Spurs were super pissed, so they thought that maybe L.A. just got a two-handed slap to the arm. He was trying to bring up a ball for a game-winning putback shot with, like, 2 seconds to go. And just from the angle I saw, it's like it looks like he got swiped, and I know that you almost never see an under-the-hoop call with a loose ball-type format, but I was like, oh, okay, but then you see Popovich and David West and all these guys go to the refs, and I don't recall Popovich going up to the refs after a game too often when the game was decided. Like, there must have been some kind of gripe. So That was just an insanely crazy play.
We won't see it again either. I'm completely convinced he lost his balance, though. If you look at the play, looked like he lost his balance. Because he was, like, falling a little bit, and he, like, tried to stay up. It's not like he was smacking him away, like, get away from me. It didn't have that feeling to it. It was just strange.
Yeah. A weird play. Unfortunately, there were not a whole lot of weird plays in Game 3 for the Cavs and Hawks.
Let's not go there. Let's save that. Let's go to the hot series, dude. We got 3 overtime games in 4. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that series is done, dude. It got swept.
Well, that's why I was going to make it quick, but fair enough. We can go to a more entertaining one. That is fair. That makes sense.
Well, I was still going to let you have a lead. You go for it. I was just saying, let's not cover that because that's a no-brainer.
Well, it's over. There's nothing to talk about. With that incredibly smooth transition, we are going to go to the Eastern Conference, and we are going to talk about Miami and Toronto. God, this has been – it's weird. I've been torn because people say the offense has been horrific at times, but on the other hand, if you're a basketball fan, how can't you love a bunch of overtime games with, like, late shots and a half-court heave and the whole place goes nuts? So maybe statistically and from a fundamental standpoint, you're seeing some grim games, but they're close and they're competitive. I mean, it's insane to think that Lowry and DeRozan are cold as ice, basically. And the series is tied 2-2. In the last game, one of them got
fouled. Well, game 3, he wasn't cold as ice, Lowry, though. He finally got off, but you're right. DeRozan was cold last night, too. You're right.
One of them got benched, one got fouled out. So, you're right. It's been incredibly close games, but you look at the shooting percentages and you're like, dude, what's happening? I don't know, Chris. I'm kind of in a funk. To put my thumb on this one, because Twitter I check of, like, these offenses are hideous and what's happening, but, you know, you're not going to complain about a game going into overtime either. A weird kind of vibe to it. And if you're Toronto, you got to be happy. It's 2-2, and your horses aren't really doing a whole lot yet. I mean, they're not hideous, but they're also not bringing it to where they're not playing their ass.
Yeah, in general, you're right.
They're not, and maybe the Lowry elbow thing is still a factor. I have not heard that mentioned as much in the media. I heard that for a glimpse in round one from a couple of different people I would trust that are like ESPN or NBA analysts, but I haven't heard it mentioned throughout ESPN. And Rosen, I don't believe he's hurt. What's your spin on this? Because I'm not quite sure what angle to take. I can rip on the Thunder and Spurs series and talk about Golden State and Portland and wrap up the Heat one quick. I don't know where to start. I'll let you kind of offer your 2 cents because this is just kind of a goofy, interesting series to talk about.
It really is. And I'll say this. The winners of the last 2 games haven't really shot bad at all. Game 3, Toronto won. They shot 47%. And then last night, let me check real quick, 45%, which is not bad. The problem was, actually, the 45% is great considering it was the 3-pointers that Miami couldn't hit. That's why I think people are calling it ugly, because it was 1 of 15 from the 3, and they still ended up, though. That's what I hate. I'll tell you this. That's what I hate about today's NBA at times. If you're one of whatever the fuck, unless you're Curry or somebody like that, you keep shooting, because that's how that team is built. You know, that's how that damn team is built. Just like Jordan, sometimes you just go, he'll shoot through it, and you're okay. You know, you have a good enough team to where you'll be in the game, and you'll be able to shoot through it and all that. But 1 of 15 is crazy considering you still shot 45%. So had you have gone a little closer to the rim, you could have maybe, you know, been shooting 48 and 50. But yeah, you're right. This one is hard to get a handle on because all game one, you're like, well, okay, Miami. We both picked Miami, right? I think we picked them in 7. I think we both picked Miami, right?
God. We
I'm pretty
both
sure
picked
because
seven.
It was veteran.
I,
It was
I'm pretty sure we picked
Miami because we went with the experience factor and all that, and all the red and yellow flags that Toronto has been showing the last couple years in the first round.
Sure.
But even in this first round, you know what I mean? Lowry did bounce back in game three and have a hell of a game, but you're right. He just doesn't look the same. And, you know, sometimes injuries can be there, and they can mentally mess you up so much to where, let's say it's feeling a little better, because obviously it had to feel decent to put up 33 or whatever, but it could be just a mental, I'm not feeling it in general, you know what I mean? It could be some of that. Last night, though, was a grind-out second half, no doubt about it. And I'd say this about the ugliness. I would say there is some shots, and you've actually mentioned this a couple times in this podcast, where there are open looks, you know, and you're like, all right, dude, open looks. And I thought Portland missed a couple of those open looks where you're like, dude, you can't do that against Golden State, man. You have to hit that bucket or you're gonna be screwed here. You know what I mean? And that's what I kind of felt that happened once they got into overtime. Although, you know, Toronto, somewhere in the fourth quarter, could have grabbed that thing by the neck somewhat, but once the Heat took it and just was running with it, I you know, sure, it went to overtime, of course, and it was 11-4 in overtime. They got up on them kind of quick, and then, you know, Toronto couldn't quite get all the way back. But like you said, even game three, like even this, you know, these long shots, you're like, the game's tied? Holy shit, we're going to overtime. So it's been kind of all over the map. I will say this, though. Both big men that they depend on are now out of the series. Who does that hurt more? A rebounding defensive guy who can block shots? You know, because right now you got like McRoberts and Stoudemire, who's old as hell and can't move really and doesn't have the fundamentals. Like you could say Duncan's old as hell, KG, these other guys are old as hell, but they still can help you. Whereas Stoudemire, he's not necessarily the most fundamental guy, so I'm not sure what he'll be able to do. But then you have the scoring threat. You know, they have another big, but he's more of a rebounder defender. He played really well last night. Which big is going to be missed more? I guess that's what this series may come down to, man.
Looks like both of them are out,
you know? Both of them are going to be out.
Maybe Whiteside comes back. I mean, I've heard he's potentially day-to-day, but Valanciunas is for sure out. So, I mean, I wouldn't cross your fingers, though. Unfortunately, obviously, for serious medical conditions, we won't be seeing Bosch either, but hopefully he's able to get just seriously healthy in life, and maybe we'll play basketball next year again. I guess we won't know, but hopefully he can solve that clot problem. I don't know. Initially, when I first saw it, I instantly thought that Toronto was affected more because Valanciunas is a guy that can score you 20 points a game and can do that pretty consistently, or at least poses that factor to where Bismack Biyombo on Toronto is going to get you defense, but it would be highly unlikely for him to score you 20. And with a situation where we've mentioned DeRozan and Lowry don't appear to be clicking on all cylinders, I think the losing another offensive force does hurt you. Obviously, Hassan Whiteside is a huge menace down low, so it'd be dumb to diminish him from a defensive standpoint. But I'm going to stick with my gut. I just think that losing a valuable scorer down low for your team offensively when your other stars are struggling is a little more of a killer than what Whiteside offers defensively for the Heat. Obviously, I did not watch these teams play nearly as much to have like 100% exact answer like I did watch like more Western Conference. But, yeah, my gut goes with Toronto, Chris, because Valanciunas has been pretty good in the playoffs. And to have a rolled ankle that knocks him out, that's obviously a big blow. And it basically just puts more pressure on DeRozan and Lowry to step up and let's do something, guys. What did your gut say, or have you maybe looked into this a little deeper than just a simple gut reaction of mine? And what's your take on the situation of who's affected more?
No, I agree. I think it's tough to measure. But, you know, if you're going to go, it's, I don't know, there's a lot of small lineups out there anyway. And I think the key where I think you brought up a good point was the fact that he's going to mean more offensively, and by, you know, by a long shot, it feels like anyway. And so they admit the length and some rebounds they can get out of him as well. Of course, you can't forget that part about him, but I think the fact that you said it, I think you said it best, you know, the fact that their two offensive guys aren't, not even one of them's at playing at a high level to lose another one. I think that the yellow flags that were up with him, you know, just, yeah, I agree. I do think, I think it's going to cost them a little bit more on both sides, but especially offense. Definitely.
I think what's your
gut telling you here as far as how this thing's going to end? I mean, is my Miami?
Oh, Christ.
I'm going Miami, but I'm going in Toronto. I'm going in Toronto.
I'll stick with Miami. I'll stick with my pick here. I'll stick with Heat in seven. But man, I wouldn't touch this one betting. I would feel confident normally in life of picking sports. This is one I would gladly stay away from. I do think it is fascinating to bring up one quick point on this series of how the ending of games have been perceived differently. Dwayne Casey was on record of saying that for these, like, last-second shots, he wants his guys to shoot the ball so that there's no time left on the clock, a.k.a. Miami can't get a shot back. And then the other theory is, or I should say the other strategy is, it's Dwayne Wade's court, and everyone in Miami can just watch him. I really don't like either of these theories. For Toronto's standpoint, if Dwayne Casey's saying, I don't really want there to be any time left on the shot clock, if you notice all Toronto's, whether game-winning or attempting shots or in regulation or overtime, that there literally is no time on the clock, which, okay, that's a safe route, but also what have you seen so many times in your life watching basketball of said dude puts up a jumper, everyone on the defense gets glazy-eyed and looks at the basketball, and boom, someone flips in for a rebound, you tap it in, game over. You lose track of how you box out. So this mindset of we're taking the last shot, no, nothing on the clock left, I don't agree with that. And then this Miami's poster pretty much saying, okay, this is Kobe treatment. It's Dwayne Wade's ball for the final 2 minutes. We're going to give him the ball. If he passes it to you, you better chuck up a shot, even though it's going to be in a weird situation, or you better pass right back to him. I get that Wade's great. He's their star player. The dude's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But
it worked last night, I'll tell you that. Or 2 nights ago, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but I just don't like the isolation angle. That we don't need to see the Kobe Bryant theory of, all right, dude, it's his turn. You know, Kobe's older now. Dwayne Wade's older, too. I just don't like the late idea, or that like Dragic was saying.
Well, who's kind of, I don't know. I think that's always been Wade's game, like, though, is isolation, and he'll get you the best shot available. I kind of disagree with that part. I'll say this, though. What happened in game four, I'll tell you what. If Dwayne Casey drew up three or four plays down the stretch for Corey Joseph, let's just say Popovich wouldn't have done it because obviously he's not a Spur anymore. But I didn't agree with that. Now, I don't know if those were all for him. To me, it felt like some of them were, but it also felt like he was holding the ball too much. And he tried to dribble in there and do something. He was a decent fadeaway that he took, but there was a couple other plays where you're like, dude, how many can we stop doing the Corey Joseph here? And I don't know if that was just I think one or two of them were designed, but there's about four or five, and he failed like two or three straight. So I think that was a problem down the stretch. As far as the, so there's nothing left on the clock. I agree, but I agree with. Go ahead.
I heard him say that after game two that he did not want any time left on the clock.
No, I'm saying personally me. I don't know about that. I don't know about leaving nothing on the clock, but
yeah,
I'm kind of in between where a tip, you know, you want to leave time for a tip, and that would still be about 1 or 2 seconds. You know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
you'd still,
mm-hmm.
you know, it kind of matters how the game's going to me too, because if you got a hot shooter on the other side, then I don't want him to have another shot at it. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a weird thing there, but I do agree that you should be able to put it up with enough time to where if your guy has a chance to tip the ball back or grab it and go back up, or, you know, grab it because it's probably an outside shot maybe, right? So a lot of times those threes, they go way off the backboard and you grab it maybe from 8-10 feet out and put it right back up. I think there should be time enough for that. Unless
yeah.
the game tells you, guess what, this dude's hot and we don't want to have it in his hands. And Wade has been as healthy as we've seen him. I'll tell you that. That's for sure.
The only reason I'm a little scared about the Wade time, you know, well, okay, let's say by the grace of God, you know, or well, let's say they made it to the NBA Finals, or let's say they face LeBron. I think you need more of a team mentality, because if you have either LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, or Draymond Green on Dwayne Wade, I favor all three of those gentlemen against shutting down Wade. So I think that if you have the mindset of your team, the playoffs, of, okay, guys, we're under a minute to go, it's Dwayne Wade time, when you get on a lockdown defender, you're going to need a different play or the confidence in someone else to pass the ball, because a Kawhi Leonard or LeBron or Draymond, they're going to shut D-Wade down, or at least I would favor them in a situation. So I think you need to have more of a different mindset of, let's have a couple of plays down the end of the stretch, Bolster, instead of it's D-Wade time. That's just my personal opinion, and I could be wrong. Maybe I'm being
too harsh on
D-Wade. But
they are getting other scoring. I mean, they're getting scoring from their point guard, 15 points a game, and some assists a game. They're getting – DeAng's got 15 points a game. Joe Johnson, who I think has been real solid, is getting 12 points a game. They had Whiteside getting 12 points a game. So it's not like he's up in the 28 range and nobody else is doing anything, but you're kind of speaking to the end of games. But to be honest with you,
yeah,
I would – I don't know. I'm okay with Wade having the ball, because he doesn't make a bunch of dumb decisions in my mind, you know.
That's fair. I just think you can get away with it now, but it just seems to be that's the mentality. So I think that could come back to bite them in the future. But I guess that is something we
sure,
could discuss,
I mean,
down the road too.
Yeah, and I don't know. That's kind of been the, you know, I mean, obviously that wasn't the case all the time when LeBron was there, but that's a whole different ball game when you have a you know, the best player in the league at the time.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind
of
how they
reoccur.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, the thing is, the whole thing about the reoccur, I don't think they're going to beat Cleveland next series. So I don't know if that's going to be the exact reason why. You know what I mean? So to me, I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know if that will prove it or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
That's fair. I guess if you are Cleveland, who we haven't mentioned yet, they did sweep Atlanta. They would have to feel very confident facing either of these teams. Clearly, this series has to go 6. As we've both picked, it could easily go 7. Teams will be tired. I mean, I guess there always is that kind of, well, guy, we might get a little rusty. They're even with time out, there hasn't been a whole lot of rust going on. But I think if you're Cleveland, you're thinking, okay, we face Miami, who without Bosch and Pascal Whiteside is a little different beast, not huge of scare. In Toronto, they're not really playing like the Toronto we've seen all year. Now, I will say, I do know that Toronto played Miami very good in the regular season, but this recollection of the Toronto
technically both of them
Chris,
did.
Yeah, but
both of them beat them 2 out of 3.
This Toronto team is not showing signs of the second seed that did give Cleveland problems. I mean, my Cleveland is smoking. So I think if you're a Cavs fan, you're feeling good. You never want to get cocky. Maybe if you're a Spurs fan, you were feeling kind of cocky going into this series. They're like, dude, the Thunder, like, we beat them in the regular season. Like, okay, let's get ready for the Dubs.
Well, especially game one, off of game one.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. But, man, just to note, 25 threes. If you'd have told me going into the playoffs one team was going to hit 25 threes, I would have assumed that Clay and Steph both had 10, and Harrison and Iggy hit a couple.
Right.
That was the Cleveland Cavaliers, though, dropping 25 threes. Dear Lord. that was something special. But yeah, Cleveland, they're kicking up the fear now, relaxing and waiting to see who's going to come out of it. Yeah, it clearly will be a pretty heavy favorite, barring some type of injury, which we've already had enough of those in the playoffs.
Yeah, we really have, man. We really have. We've had a lot of them.
More so on the West Coast. But yeah, our injury max is full. May the sport gods not let any more occur. I don't want to see a series where it would be the Spurs was missing Kawhi Leonard or the Dubs without Steph or LeBron. Let's let the injuries wait till next season or something. We're good to go there. But yeah, at least Chris, I would say this was a fun show today. We had some stuff to talk about.
Okay, hold on. I got to talk about Cleveland a little bit too now.
Go ahead.
I think you're nervous. That's what it is. You're like, oh shit, they're getting better now. Oh god.
Yeah.
No, here's the thing. We can't act like we knew this was gonna happen. Okay.
No.
Like you said, 25. That's impressive in one game. How about 77 in a four-game stretch? There's top four. 79 was the top. Then you had 77, or like 77 or whatever the hell, and then there was like 75, 74, but three out of the top four all time were in seven-game series. They hit that number in four freaking games, which is crazy. And what were they missing? What were they missing last year in the finals? A couple things. Obviously, Irving, right? That's a miss, right? Because you liked how
– yeah.
Bedova was playing, and he was at least making Curry work on the offensive end and grinding him, you know what I mean? But you also needed an offensive guy to make Curry work on the defensive side or put their best defender on him too, or one of their best defenders. I think that's key too, rather than always getting one guy to go, okay, these three people we're going to use on LeBron. Well, what about Kyrie? You got to put someone on him so Curry doesn't have to run around the whole game. You got to give him some break off of him. So that's key. They needed scoring. They need another scorer. They didn't have another scorer in that series, right? And they needed just a couple of shots to fall because their offensive, their outside shooting was just hilarious, and that's why you started to see LeBron just say, "Fuck it, I'm gonna shoot." I know there's two dudes on me. I'm shooting. I'm not gonna pass it out to you dumb motherfuckers out there because you guys can't hit shit. Shumpert just brick city. Smith had that one game, but for the rest, he was just brick city. They needed just a little bit of 3-point shooting. Not a lot. They don't need to. They are leading the playoffs right now, but they don't even need that much. You know, they can be well below Golden State if that is the matchup in the finals, let's just say in theory.
Yeah.
But that's what they needed. And at the end of last year, they had found a way, maybe in the last 20 to 30 games, they were buzzing into the playoffs, and they found a way to get Kevin Love happy and involved. Now, sometimes – I remember talking about this. It wasn't always in the fourth quarter, but they found a role for him. Well, that has changed. They now have found a bigger role for him, and they can play LeBron off of him. And the way Kyrie is healthy now, you could see some of this season he wasn't healthy. Of course, some of it was rust. Some of it, as a whole, they went through so much drama within, with the coaching, just everything. But all of a sudden, here they are peaking at the right time, and to have, you know, to make it, I think they're going to make it to the finals, but to have Irving, Love, and Channing Frye available from the outside shooting, that really adds a lot to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It does, Chris. They're clearly clicking on offense, maybe better than they have so all year. You can't rip Atlanta. They were a top four defensive team, I believe, or top five or six. They were good defensively. Clearly, their defense was relatively lackluster in the playoffs, giving up that many threes. And they don't really
not on
have
J.R. Smith, though, because everything was contested on J.R. Smith. Because you know he don't like to hit open ones. He only likes it when it's contested.
That's very true. They, you know, but like we said going in the series, like they don't really have a LeBron matchup guy. But not many teams in the NBA do. I don't think, I mean, Christ, Detroit played the Cavs tighter than Atlanta did if you look just at the games order on paper or just from the naked eye. So Atlanta didn't exactly have their best foot forward. And now they're, you know, but they've also been talking about mixing up that roster. They just had a different vibe this year. I remember when we were going into the previewing our show, it's like Atlanta just last year seemed to be their year. And this year they've been a little worse with a little more drama maybe in the clubhouse and Cleveland's better. So it was kind of a –
Yeah, but Cleveland didn't lose a game
down.
To them. So it really doesn't matter what kind of Atlanta it was, though, because they didn't even lose a game to them.
Yeah, it's impressive. But, you know, it is. But and they more likely will be favored. So I guess if you're a Cleveland fan, you're happy, but you're still – I guess you're going to be judged come the finals. Something crazy could happen. But this is almost kind of another, all right, boys, our true rewarding season is winning the finals this year. I think if you're a sports fan, you never want to get greedy for your team, but I don't think a Cleveland fan is going to be satisfied with winning the Eastern Conference this year. It's nothing to slight, but I think they expect to be a strong favorite against who they face. And, yeah, we'll see. Their offense is a different beast. But the guys that you mentioned – They're gifted offensively, but I think it's their defense that hasn't changed necessarily either. So that would be an element to talk about down the road. But offensively, they're hot. To hit that many threes, you're clearly passing the ball well on something the Spurs have been struggling with. People are hitting their open shots or contested shots. They're on fire. So hopefully the Cavs don't get a little rust. That can normally sneak up on you for a game one. I don't know the exact stats off the top of my head, but there are times where a team will come off a little rusty because you were off the court for 6 or 7 days because the team you're playing went in a much longer series than you slept. So I would say a lot of positives, Chris, offensively, but still.
You say a lot of positives, but you don't mention one of them.
Well,
a lot of
positives,
but I have yet to mention them. I'm just saying the finals matchup is the one I then will prove it. I mean, they play pretty damn good in this series.
Offensively
and defensively, by the way.
Yeah, that.
I mean, I even saw
did.
Kevin Love on the floor trying to go for a ball, dude. So that tells you something.
That is.
We can move on.
Yeah.
You're having problems trying to find good stuff about Cleveland. That's okay.
They just don't have a lot of good competition to face. That's all. You know, they're walking through to the finals more than like. So
well, you
can't when they get there.
You could say, I mean, has Golden State had the roughest route so far? They're beating them without their number one guy.
Well, I would say that Oklahoma City and Portland presents a bigger fear to teams than Atlanta or.
Well, they didn't play Oklahoma City. So I don't know why you're bringing them up. They didn't play Oklahoma City. They played a Houston team that quit on the season, and they played without their guy. They managed to beat 2 out of 1 games without their without the MVP of the league this year. So how great is Toronto? They're all offense too. They're not a defensive team. They're all offense, but that's not, you know, that's got to be the play in the quay. I don't think they've had a tough route so far.
You're beating these teams
without your number one guy, dude. So that kind of tells you right there. And you could make an argument that Toronto maybe not even be – or not Toronto. that Portland maybe not even be there if it wasn't for Chris Paul getting hurt. So,
I don't know. I just think that we're feeling very confident as to how the Eastern Conference will fill out. And I have a team I'm going to cheer for, but I don't think you can be nearly as confident for what you expect the Western Conference Finals will play out and who necessarily still may even be in them. So,
that doesn't have anything to do with talking about Cleveland and how they played in the series, though, what you just said. I agree with what you said, but that's off topic.
They were great. I'm honestly, I guess I'll make my one point. I'm honestly surprised Atlanta did look quite as bad as they did. I honestly don't get how a team with the players they have can give up 25 threes. I know Barkley was saying he got to throw an elbow. Some people in Atlanta were pissed. Cleveland was celebrating. that comes from the mentality I learned of playing football in junior high and high school. If you don't want a team to run the ball down your throat, blitz them and stop the damn run. If you're the Hawks, if you don't want the Cats to shoot 25 threes, don't let them shoot. Play better defense. I mean, to give that
plus
up on
your
own court.
Yeah, plus you got a shot clock in basketball. That whole thing, that pisses me off because you got a shot clock. You got to put something up. You're not driving to the rack and drawing ball. You got to shoot the friggin' thing, you know?
Yeah, I'm clearly not the biggest Cavs supporter, but I was very impressed with how they did kick butt. They looked great. In Atlanta, I don't know. Maybe there is a little more of the rumblings of people leaving, the team not being set. Maybe that does affect you a little bit. Because when you look at chemistry, Cleveland does celebrate and dance a lot, but part of that is they get along. The Warriors, the last couple of years, a lot of people say they get along better than any team in the league. There is something to be said for chemistry. And now, when's the last time we heard a negative issue about Kevin Love? I guess that's one thing to say about Cleveland. It's a side note, but for the last couple of years, it was, well, Love wasn't in the team snap
set
after the
year,
game. Or,
coach, there's a rumor that this year the coach said either me or Love, though. I mean, it sounded like a pretty strong rumor. He gave him an ultimatum, and they went with Love.
Well, Love's got to be happy. LeBron picked him.
Yeah, right?
maybe now they're bud now. I didn't expect a 4-0 beatdown. Like I said, Detroit played him tighter. Like, I love Van Gundy as a coach, and they got some pieces, but maybe this is just kind of a sign of it was a long year in Atlanta. They didn't live up to expectations of what they'd accomplished last year, and Cleveland is just smoking hot. I like I said, if you had told me some team was going to hit that many threes, I would have said, okay, well, you know, who were the Warriors playing, and the game must have been an oracle. Yeah, stop them. The only good point I heard to explain why that would be Bush League or rubbing in the face is that in that game, if you would have had LeBron and J.R. Smith and Kyrie chucking up threes with like 5 minutes to go up 20, if you keep your starters in, Chris, to prove a point, which I'm sure you'll agree with me on this, and they're chucking up threes and kind of dancing in your face when the game's done and there's like 4 to 5 minutes to go, then you might throw a little hard foul because there's no reason for that. Then you truly are showing someone up. But if the starters are on the bench and their backups are jacking threes, which they're allowed to do, stop them. There's reason they're backups, and you're on your home court getting your butt kicked. Foul a guy or play better D, you know. Put a hand in the face, like you said. Check them at half court. Do something.
Well, a lot of the damages were fourth quarter. Besides that game that they hit 25 threes, that was over, you know, on the, you know, getting into the third, it was already going to be a done deal because they stretched the lead and all that. But although the endings weren't as close as the Detroit, but if you actually look at the three of the four games, they were tight games. It's just that 8 to 6 minute mark, that's where actually, like that last game, Cleveland just went the fuck off to close that fourth quarter down because they actually, they were down. They were down by 11 in the third quarter. You know, they were down in that game. I don't think Atlanta played as bad as you're saying because they were tight. Three out of the four were tight games. They didn't close strong. And that kind of goes with Atlanta to an extent as well, if you think about it. Who's their number one guy? Well, they have Millsap. They have some guys, of course, but do they have a big two or a big three? Or, you know, you have to have two studs and then a bunch of good, solid dudes around you or the big three and a bunch of good role players. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Let's wrap this puppy up, though. Got any final thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, and lastly, you've had a conversation all year where a lot of people say your backup point guard's better than your starting point guard. And that's not a slap in the face of Jeff Teague, but a lot of people think Schroeder's the answer. So how many teams in the NBA can you think of where people are saying the backup point guard's better than your starting? That's a conversation that's almost never held. Because if a skill level is a difference, you swap people out. And I can imagine that is kind of a tough for chemistry of, well, God, we put Schroeder in. Well, do we put Teague in? Like, Teague's not a joke. Like, it will be interesting to see. I hope they don't blow it up. I was listening to Zach Lowe talk about how if you blow it up in the NBA, it gets scary. Because when you blow stuff up, can come back to bite you. Atlanta's not a joke for a team. They're not a bad spot.
Yeah.
But anyway, so,
I mean, LeBron could get hurt next year, and they could go to the finals. You never know.
Yeah, Atlanta's a legit top 3 to 4 seed next year, assuming they don't blow it up. Okay, Chris, one point, then we're done. But this has been driving me absolutely freaking nuts. I'll try and keep this very short because I know we got to get going. But this NBA idea now of admitting when calls are missed after the night of the game or the day after, what is the bleeping point? When it happened after the Harden call against games, when they beat us, no one celebrated, and they came out saying Harden should have been called for a chuck-off on AD, the basket should not have counted. Okay, I'm like, maybe ESPN's just doing this for once. But now we had it after the OKC Spurs game. Unless you're going to make a rule that allows the NBA to change the winner of a game and bring the people back on the court, I don't need NBA freaking alerts on ESPN saying, hey, by the way, we missed the call. Your team should have won. Sorry, we didn't call it that way in the court, but we should have. Who gives a shit? The game's over. Unless you're going to change the call, I don't want to see that the ref missed a hand check. And Harden's never going to call for an offensive foul there anyways. And the Ginobili play, it happened. It sucked. I don't care that the officials say, hey, we missed it. Sorry. Oh, by the way, if you were in Vegas betting on the game, our bad. You may have lost $20,000, but we want to apologize. And if you're a Thunder fan, oh, you guys won, but you're lucky to win. Get rid of it already. I'm already fed up with it. Because unless you're going to change the future, or excuse me, change the past, I don't need to see changings of rules. If they did this for the NFL, you would have a half an hour show for 300 calls about how they're missing the game. Get rid of it. I'm done with it.
I got to say, they do it in the NFL, Marshall. Every week, you send stuff, and it comes back, and head coaches talk about it, and it's in your city. You know the calls that they got wrong.
But
Now it means more in the playoffs, but NFL's been doing that for years. Every single week you send like 7 plays off, it comes back to you, and if you listen to any presser or anything like that from a head coach, it's asked to them or they talk about it. I'm not saying every week, but it's been like this. The NBA's admitted that they've got calls wrong in the past, too. This isn't just the first year.
I don't see the point. What's the point of doing it? They're not changing the game. Should we get rid of the replay then, too?
Because what's the point? Sometimes that frustrates us when we see a foul and they can't do anything about it. I don't know.
But
I hear you to an extent, but they do this. They've done this, though.
Yeah, but in the NFL, if you do it, you get taxed for a fine. And the NFL, every team does send about 15 EMBU. I mean, 15 times 30, like, there's probably 300 phone calls that go in. I mean, we're not seeing all of them. But I just don't like watching SportsCenter an hour after a game, they're saying, by the way, we missed the call. Sorry. The game's done. The calls are the calls. It's almost like you're rubbing in, like, oh, we're the NBA. Like, you know, our refs are admitting we missed it. But to the fan base or the players, they don't need your sympathy. The game's over. You're not changing the game. Just let it go. I don't know.
I hear you. To get all this way this year, they've done this in the past, though.
Well, I guess I never noticed it.
Yeah, you never noticed it because they've done this in the playoffs or not or whatever. They've done this plenty of times. It did happen. Well, actually, that was first round that Houston game. So,
maybe it's just being brought to in a more of a social media atmosphere that makes it more available to me.
Well, the thing is, when you're looking right at the guy, the guy's looking right at that Spurs player or the player that freaking slammed into Ginobili. The guy's right there. The guy's right. The ref is right 5 feet away. Like, how could he miss that? But he's not so used to seeing that, so he may have been wandering eye as well. But I don't mind them owning up and saying, you're right, this is the missed call. I guess I'm just somewhat used to it. I don't know. I like him to say that. I guess that's never happened as far as that play. I've never seen – a lot of old-timers said they've never seen a play like that. But I don't mind.
Yeah.
they've done.
Now, you're right. A play like that's the minority. I agree with you on that. That's a fluke play. Kind of like when we discussed the Duke-Miami kickoff. Sometimes stuff in sports Ram stuff happens, that's fine. But for the Harden in game three, it's like, dude, that call's never getting made. I don't want to hear – I guess just my point is kind of just rubbing the face to a team or a fan base of like, hey, we missed that call to cost you the game, but we're just going to try and be hoity-toity about it. And maybe my opinion's different.
But if
the
they don't say anything, then it's a conspiracy. Then it's the NBA conspiracy. If they don't say anything, then it's just like, well, add it to the conspiracy. They all want – they have a certain city that they want, so they're going for that city like everybody thinks the NBA's all about. So which one do you want? Do you want a conspiracy or do you want to say we fucked up? Guess it's the same thing. It could still be.
I guess saying you did it doesn't mean much.
You know, the government and the FBI will say something. Yeah, that happened 42 years ago. Well, yeah, you just admitted it now. It doesn't do much for us now. Yeah, I see your point, but I guess I do see your point. It's just I guess I'm used to it. But I do see your point. I'm making a valid point. I'm just used to it, so that's why it's kind of coming out. Now, I wouldn't say left field, but
And maybe just with the social media nowadays, with Twitter and ESPN, obviously breaking news more quickly. Maybe has to become more noticeable to it now. So
I don't remember the bottom line all the time. Maybe that's it too.
That's the one that I'm kind of like, dude. That's like a breaking news alert. Like, I don't know about that. But, yeah, I just think from a fan perspective, and maybe that is why I kind of got on the rant first, because it was that Golden State game. It's like, that's a call that's never made. Like, let's let the game go. It's over. But I'll stop. Anyways, this was a fun show. We finally had some stuff to talk about. We've had series of storylines. I'm hoping that injuries are done. Cleveland set a record. Curry won MVP and showed why he deserved it last night. And I was massively wrong, and the Spurs in Oklahoma City are having a series. So let's go. The show is going to get better from this point on. When we do our next show, maybe we'll be breaking down a Game 7 for Toronto and for the Spurs in Oklahoma. So it'll only get better. The shows are going to be more fun, and we're eventually going to get to the conference finals, which should, in theory, bring us some great basketball as well. So, Chris, I'll be back. Hope everyone has a great week. We had to say no RIPs this show, which has been rare this year. So I pray to God that everyone does stay healthy and we don't have to have any medical updates next show. And we'll be back next week. Take care. Have a great week. Peace.